Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I am Ellie Gibson.
And I am Helen Thorne.
And who are you?
I'm Jeremy Vine.
It's Jeremy Vine!
Oh my God!
Yes! Off of, you know, the radio and the telly and everything.
All those things. The dancing tall guy.
Yes. I mean, why don't you introduce yourself, Jeremy? Well, how would you describe Jeremy Vine, Jeremy Vine?
We were just in the Radio 2 lift, and as we were there going up to the sixth floor, the speaker started playing what sounded like my voice, and I pointed up at it in a kind of a slightly Alan Partridge way, and you went, oh, that's you. And I said, no, it's this bloke on Steve Wright who impersonates me. But I've gradually become more and more like the impression of me. So I suddenly start shouting very loud like that. So you've got to stop me if that happens, because it's very... But there's nothing to say, really, except I do a radio show every day, and I'm a bloke.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think
you've done some things.
And I'm a father of two beautiful little girls, and that's it.
Well, you know, and you're an author. You've got a book out.
I have a book. That's
true. Let's just get that out of the way and plug it now.
I know. I brought it with me. You can sign it.
I'm such a... Do you know? I think probably you're the same. I'm so useless at plugging my books and stuff. I just don't. I feel mortified. I'm sorry, everybody. But I know I'm talking about my, but please don't buy it afterwards because it would be really embarrassing, you know.
Yeah.
Now then, the publisher, when I had this book thing and I was going around doing talks, and you, well, of course our paths crossed.
Yes.
One of the talks, the publisher said, "Look, we are." She's a very posh person. It was a very good talk. Everyone's enjoying it, but you're not mentioning your book at all. And she said in a sort of desperate voice. So I then decided to do a proper sales pitch.
Mm-hmm.
But even that was just mortifying.
Aww.
I'm going to be signing later, and you know.
Do you like writing the book, though? Because the book's really... We'll get this bit out of the way. But the book is excellent because it's about your work here at the BBC and anecdotes and your thoughts on fatherhood and everything. But did you actually really enjoy writing the book?
I did. Putting
it all down?
It was really... It came about because I began to think, as one often does in this organisation, about, you know, the speed of life and how long have I been doing this job and how many calls have I taken? That was the crucial thing. Because obviously I take phone calls from brilliant listeners. And I realised it was very near to 25,000. So I just thought I should do something about the 25,000th call. Unfortunately, it was a guy who just rang up and shouted the word sperm bank and then hung up. So
I hope he's single.
I said, Dad, leave him alone. He's just trying to do a radio show.
So, yeah, it was an item about where do you borrow money from if the banks won't lend to you. But there's the danger of basically sorting your historic moment in advance. You know, don't do that.
Yeah.
So I wrote about, you know, what they taught me, these listeners, that's all. And we have one on today, actually, called Jean Neal from Rotherham.
Mm-hmm.
And Jean was up against the... Well, not up against. She was just basically saying, why does anyone invest in shares? Because the markets are crashing today. And she, I wouldn't go... This is her actual voice. I wouldn't go near them if you paid me. I'd rather bet on the Grand National. So we had the business editor, Simon Jack, in. And she said, are you... It's just a brilliant question. He explained how the whole thing worked. And she said, are you rich? Why not if you know everything? So I thought, yes.
She's great.
Get her in.
Classic exactly. Takedown.
Yeah. Oh, get her in front of a fortune teller next week. Oh,
brilliant.
I'm with Jean. Absolutely. So, Gary, you did mention your family back there, and technically this is a parenting podcast.
Yes, indeed.
Should we flog that horse?
Yes. I'd be happy to talk about parenting. If anyone can give me any advice, I'd love it. My kids are, they're two girls, 13 and 11.
Okay.
So I'm going into the teenage daughter territory. What can I say about that? Somebody just recently gave me a book called Untangled.
Oh.
Have you heard about that?
No.
Written by, this will put you off a bit, a Canadian psychologist.
Oh, I like a Canadian.
Do you?
But that's another story.
She had quite a good year with Canadians.
Oh, really?
She was traveling.
There was a time I went backpacking around Southeast Asia. Again, right. It's another story. It's for another time.
So you went across the border?
I've just got the word mountain in my head. Let's just move on.
Well, I can't. But anyway, she's. I'm reading this thing and it's full of utter gems.
Oh,
so for example,
so you feel well equipped now going into the big teenage years.
Yeah, it says your daughter may often just feel upset for no reason, and it doesn't mean it's your fault. They want to express stuff that, you know, they want to say they love you, they hate you, whatever. It goes changed in a minute. That doesn't mean it's your fault. Just sort of go with it.
Yeah. Mm.
They said they'll do the it's called the hot potato handoff, where the child, and I haven't really had this with my daughter, but she said, basically, you know, a child comes in with a bad chemistry mark. Instead of being upset about it, she leaves it for her father to see. And when he says, how has this happened? You're brilliant at chemistry. You got 30%. What's going on? She says, oh, I don't even care. And then he becomes the angry one because that it's very much in the child's toolkit is to hand it off because you can't handle the emotion, you know. And then the other very good practical thing.
Also, chemistry is bollocks. Like, who needs chemistry,
yeah,
really?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
When's the last time you were like, oh, I wish I knew more chemistry,
I know.
And then I could solve this problem?
Well,
I don't think so.
The answer to that is presenting eggheads, to be frank, because unfortunately...
You need to know everything.
Yeah. I don't, or pretend to know everything.
Yes.
The periodic table comes up the whole bloody time. Mm. I mean, what does RU stand for?
Oh, I know that one.
Go on.
Is it copper?
Nope. Go on.
Rust.
No, not rust.
RU.
You were concentrating so hard there. I thought either it's the Canadian is back or you're about to give us the right answer. I think it might be Rutherfordium or Ruthenium. I'm not sure, but it's not rust.
Yeah.
That's Fe, ferrous, whatever.
Oh. But the bottom line is, none of us know, and yet the world still turns.
Yeah,
the
world still turns.
We still sleep at night.
I like that approach.
Yeah. But sorry, I interrupted you. You were going to say the second.
Oh, yeah. The really good piece of advice, practical piece, is you have an arrangement with your daughter, and I stress mine is only 13, we're not in that zone yet, but where you say, if you call us any time, we'll pick you up, it doesn't matter why. If you're at a party or something and you sense this is getting dodgy, if you call mum, she's not going to say, what the hell are you doing there, why do you... don't worry, you won't have to explain, we'll just come and get you.
Great.
Because once the child feels that they're going to be in trouble for calling, then they don't call, and then all kinds of other things happen. And I thought, okay, this is really good advice.
Can I ring you next time at a boring party? Can you come get me?
Unless it's because you're speaking to me at the party, and then that would be really awkward. But no, yes, you can. I still want that arrangement with my mum now, actually.
Yeah.
Can you come and get me from?
Yeah. Well, we sort of have that arrangement with my dad, who is 70, and has recently become properly employed as our roadie. So now he drives us all around the country in my Skoda Yeti, with all our props.
Oh, how brilliant.
Up and down
we
the motorway.
Sit in the back seat like teenagers and rehearse our comedy show, and he drives us.
Supposedly we rehearse. What we usually mostly do is, because he doesn't put his hearing aids in, we just take the piss out of him in full earshot.
That's amazing.
Of him. So it's good fun.
That's lovely.
So maybe that could be you in a few years.
Yeah, well, I'd be happy to be the driver, the official driver. I think that sounds lovely, because you sit in the back and you can actually do banter and you can see what works.
Yeah.
But
it
sounds like he needs to switch at least one hearing aid on.
No, I think it's best for everybody.
Yeah.
Really?
And also, he's anti-sat-nav. So he will have photocopied a map, he would have all memorised it.
He just has the way to Norwich is in his head. It's in his head.
That
amazing
thing of older people refusing to use digital navigation.
It's like some kind of offence to him. Like,
oh, I know. Yeah. I had a relative come around. I can't go anywhere. I forgot to bring my map. So I think, he actually goes around London with an A to Z, and he won't turn a street corner unless he's on the right page.
Oh,
God. That's great.
It's beautiful, but it's a little bit frustrating at times. Yeah.
So your girls are a little bit older than... A lot of our listeners have got younger kids, like maybe sort of early schoolers or babies even.
Yes.
So you've done all that. What's your Jeremy Vine nugget of wisdom for people with younger kids? What's your number one survival tip?
How do we get through the primary years?
I think that... as a dad, my father I love dearly. I was a pretty troubled, sort of unpleasant teenager, actually. I thought I was a punk, really. And we never had, my dad and I, one thing that we did together.
Mm.
And he once took me bowling, and I really enjoyed it. I couldn't really tell him until 30 years later how much I enjoyed having him with me for that. But the rest of the time, I was just bolshy. So with my two daughters, from quite an early age, I've tried to make sure we've got one thing that we do together. So with Martha, my oldest, since she was five, I've been taking her to see Chelsea.
Right.
So we go and see the Chelsea home games. And I'm thinking, in the modern world, it's still very much Chelsea, you know, football's for boys, and it's not, you know, and to have a girl who knows about football and how, where he's, Eden Hazard plays when he's having a good game, and what's the positioning of the midfield diamond is brilliant. But also it gives us great father-daughter time. So I think having just a thing between you is really, really good, a special thing. With my other daughter, it's a bit more complicated. Sort of, it's more kind of to do with maybe seeing a movie or dance. She's a big dancer. She has to go dancing. So when I was on Strictly, I was, you know, she got to know that my dancer I was with, and that was a big thing for her. So I think creating a bit of a zone, which is a non-parent zone, maybe just a bit of a friend zone.
And it doesn't have to be Chelsea. It could be a good football team like Crystal Palace, something like that.
Well, it's funny you mention that.
You're doing so well.
You've said that on the right day. I don't know if you're following football at the moment, but we have just had two very bad games. Oh. So yes,
you don't try
look now. You feel like no. It's fine. We lost. I took Martha on a weekend ago, and we lost to Bournemouth 3-0 at home. And she said, "I don't know what's going on." You know, she's like, "This is not supposed to happen." And then we lost yesterday to Watford 4-1. So something bad is happening.
I'm very sorry for your loss.
She is not at all.
But is that advice any good?
That's really good.
Do you need something a bit younger about? I tell you what really annoys my wife is if someone says to me, "Oh, you're doing childcare," and she's thinking, "Hang on, when I'm mothering,
yes,
nobody calls it childcare.
No,
when he's fathering, it's childcare. What's going on?" You know,
and
that is, so staying, trying to avoid that particular car crash is a good idea.
No, it makes us a bit stabby, us women.
Yeah.
When
yes,
but also because I think fatherhood has been kind of fetishized a bit recently on social media, and like the way, "Oh, isn't he a good dad because he's like at the park with his kids?" When I think that disparity is still very strong.
Yeah.
So that's a bit, that pisses us off a bit. But, you know, but keep doing it, dads. I'm not saying don't do it. Just don't go on about it. You're not a fucking hero.
Keep it yourself.
But we can swear, can we?
Yeah, go on.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
No, sorry.
I mean, I don't know what your BBC contract says. Maybe you can't.
I don't know if I can swear in my own office.
We're our own bosses.
Of course, in podcasts we can swear.
I know, it's a new
maybe
thing.
Maybe I'll come out with something potty mouth later, like the word bottom or something.
Yes,
or...
bottom's a good one. that'll make it to the headline of the Sun. Jeremy Vine says bottom on Slaggy Podcast.
What do they do next? That's half the Daily Mail written right there.
That's right.
That's done.
You're welcome.
Yes. Now, you mentioned earlier you were a bit of a punk back in the day. Can you tell us about that?
Up there on that picture down the bottom right, it says Jeremy Rotten, and that's a picture that's from when I started on Radio 2, but they had a photo in the mail of me as a... Now, I know I don't look like a punk because I'm wearing...
Is that you in the middle with a
bow?
And is that your brother?
My brother Tim Vine on the left. Yeah. That's right. And then
you look like
me.
You work in a Ryman's.
I know. The punk band that we formed missed the point of punk. It was in Cheam in Surrey, very middle class. We wore flare trousers and Bermuda shirts and ties. So it became like this band has totally missed the point of what's going on. And we then realised this was working slightly to our advantage, you know, so we were different. And it gave me an interesting rule about news, which is that it's a disruption of the norm. So a punk band that looks like a punk band is never going to get anywhere. But a punk band that's from Cheam that is wearing flared trousers, suddenly everyone's interested because they're so ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously... We were briefly Cheam's biggest band, but it didn't go beyond that.
Cheam! Where did you...
Dear brother, you know, that's sort of, I suppose, the beginning of his performance career, because he's now a comedian like yourself.
But were you the funny one? I always hear when comedians say, "Oh, but my brother's funnier." Is Tim funnier?
Oh, yeah, he's funnier than me, for sure, yeah. But he also has a very mechanical mind where humour's concerned. So I noticed when he does his jokes that he will spend a lot of time writing them. So, for example, I had a friend who was run down by a... I've already messed it up. And he says, "You must never tell my jokes because you messed them up." I said, "I don't mess them up." Okay, let me try again. I had a friend whose ambition was to be run over by a steam train. When it happened, he was stuck chuffed to bits. Okay.
Yeah.
Tim worked with that to get every word in the right place, and suddenly he worked out what the best order. And I think, gosh, that's quite a precise thing. Velcro, what a ripoff, you know. I mustn't do any more of his jokes.
I thought you'd agree with better on that one.
Yeah,
you're warming up.
I was so proud of him. He got the best joke at the Fringe Festival for crime in multi-story car parks, that is wrong on so many different levels. And I thought, oh, that's such a perfect joke.
It's a beautiful joke.
He's definitely funnier than me, yeah.
On your Tim Vine. He's done all right, hasn't he?
He's done well. To earn a living from making people laugh is the, well, as you know, it is the highest occupation. I really believe that.
More than teaching, more than, you know,
nursing,
medicine.
Oh, no, I'll take that smoke up my ass. Thank you very much.
Yes, I think so. I mean, it's like being a poet. You know, what could be higher than that?
We do often, like when we drive around the country, we'll turn to each other and go, we're being paid for this. This is wonderful.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
You'll do that and then I'll go, yeah, £100. And then we go home.
We'll get a good Nando's meal out of that. Yeah. That's fine. But do you still get that buzz? You must.
From being paid.
We're not
going there.
No,
you can
have
it.
Don't make
sure.
We're in the BBC.
It's fine. Yeah.
The point is, we know you're a good man, Jeremy. We know you've taken one for the team.
Yeah.
And we do, of course, mean the team with vaginas. And that's, I feel, all we need to say about that.
I mustn't even laugh during this section because it is such a serious thing inside the BBC and out.
And quite rightly.
But as to the main thing about, you're asking about sort of satisfaction. When I was 12 years old, I was given a little 10-minute slot on Capital Radio one Sunday on a show. And I walked in and I saw a glimpse of Kenny Everett, my hero. Oh, yes, seriously.
Yes.
The greatest DJ ever.
No, I've got the feels.
Was he doing the funny legs?
He was just around.
Where did the legs end?
No, I used to, as a teenager, just go to the spare room of my parents' house on a Saturday and listen to his show on Capital Radio, just sit there listening. That's amazing to think of a teenager doing that now. Because, you know, you got screen, you got everything else. And so that inspired me to, I thought, I want to be a DJ and I want to do it. And my mum said, well, I mean, playing records isn't really a way of making a living, darling. You know, you need to be doing something more serious. So anyway, I ended up on journalism and blah and Newsnight, and then I end up playing records and radio too. So I do sometimes look around and think, oh, this is the best job. It's undoubtedly the best job in the BBC. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that because I've done Crime Watch and Panorama and Newsnight, and I've been a foreign correspondent and a Westminster correspondent. This is the best job. Because you can play Fleetwood Mac. We played Gypsy today. What a song. Oh, what a song.
Best Fleetwood Mac song, would you say?
If I couldn't choose that one, I would say probably Never Going Back Again. And if you listen to that Rumours album, there are some, I love music, and there are some albums which are basically greatest hits albums the day they come out.
Mm. Yeah.
So Carole King Tapestry is one.
Yes.
Oasis, What's the Story?
That's an excellent
album. I think is the greatest hits album the day they released it.
Yeah.
And Fleetwood Mac Rumours.
And Steptacular by Steps.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Obviously.
Oh, I forgot to mention that.
In my car CD, you know this because you have to be in it all the time. In my
she
car
drives.
CD
yes.
changer,
I get no choice.
Some of them get changed in and out, but the two that are always there are Rumours and Graceland.
Graceland,
by Paul Simon.
Definitely.
Classic, you see.
And you've met Simon, haven't you?
I met him, but because he was in for Ken's show.
Did you have to kneel? He's very short.
Do you know what really struck me, and I have seen him in concert. I don't worship the Simon, but I do. I can see that he's absolutely in the pantheon. It's a bit like Neil Diamond. What I was interested in was, as I watched him on the station, you know, on the air and off the air, he never smiled once. And I thought, is there some deep unhappiness? I don't know. You know, I just wondered. It made me rather sad.
That is a shame.
And I think maybe that's the artist, though. You know, as Princess Diana said in one of those recorded phone calls, if you want to be like me, you've got to suffer.
He did write a song that starts, Hello Darkness, My Old Friend.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the jolly soul.
No, he's not.
I just think inherently he's not that jolly.
Do you think Art's more the jokes man?
Yeah, Art probably wrote the one about the zoo, I think.
Well, Art did. Of course, Art didn't do the music. He did the words, didn't he? So a poet and a one-man band, that's the description.
Oh.
I always think, yeah, that's on the verge of...
That's what they say about us, isn't it?
Yes, I'm the miserable harmonic wordsmith.
That's it.
Yes,
we get a lot of, because we're a double act. We get a lot of comparisons. Bert and Ernie, Morecambe and Wise.
And does one of you do the music and the other not? Then
no, we do. We do basically everything.
Well, Helen's sort of the boss of the social media. I'm in charge of technology and driving.
Yeah.
So it's, in some ways, it's quite a gender stereotypical.
Yes, I do the nice things, like I make the cakes, welcome people in, and Ellie asks how much money we're getting. So it works out very well. It works
and
out.
And then there's a father at the wheel as well, which is good too.
Yeah.
And then Helen always remembers who people are at parties while I stand there and go, yep, nice to see you again.
Yeah.
Again.
And I go, that's the editor of Hello. And she's like, ah.
Yes, what's Hello?
you find your niches and your special roles, I think, within, because it's like having a marriage. It's like having, because we spend more time with each other. We spend more time in hotels together than I have with my husband. Yeah.
We've probably had more sex. Oh,
probably, yes. I mean, that's always a bonus. With benefits, of course, yes.
Yeah, you were a war correspondent, weren't you, for a bit? Or you used to go out
I mean, I wouldn't really call it. I mean, I did have reported on wars. I was Africa correspondent, and I was on the Today programme when they used to send. And this is the crazy thing about the BBC. You start as a trainee. I then got a job on the Today programme in a slightly strange way. What happened was I started to work for them on my days off to try to get noticed, because you're worth less than a flake of croissant on the floor of the canteen when you start in this organisation. It's 20,000
people.
What
a lovely image.
How do you even get noticed? And I used to come past through Carnaby Street to walk to Broadcasting House. And there was a shop in Carnaby Street that was, I noticed, amidst all the sort of tat, the tourist tat, this is about 30 years ago, was selling Nazi memorabilia. Can you believe that? So the iron-on swastikas and iron crosses and all that. God. So I went and got a Ewer, which was then the reel-to-reel recording machine. And I thought I would go and sort of do an interview with the owner of the shop or do it. So anyway, I stood outside the shop thinking I can do this as a package. And I said, I'm standing outside a shop in the heart of London's bustling tourist centre, and it's selling Nazi memorabilia, and isn't it incredible? And then the owner of the shop then suddenly appeared, swinging a very big lump of wood. And he swung it at me and at the machine, and I then turned to try and shield the machine. And he hit me on the back very slightly with a piece of wood, but it wasn't anything serious. But anyway, I came into the Today office and I'd done this piece, and it's quite dramatic, you know. So I'm commenting on this thing, and then I'm attacked by a piece of wood. They weren't at all bothered about the attack on me, but they were bothered by the attack on a piece of BBC equipment, which for them was a heinous offence. But I suddenly started to exist. It went out, and I was 23, and I thought, "Oh, I've just been on the air with being attacked with a lump of wood." And then after that, I joined the Today programme. And in answer to your question, they did send me to some places where there was fighting. And I guess the one that was for me stands out was the former Yugoslavia. But you know, the funny thing is, just being so young and before health and safety, you just went.
Yeah,
no flak jacket. I hired a car in Slovenia, so I would have been, let's say, 25. I drive. I think to myself, okay, the war seems to be in Serbia and Croatia, so I drive out of Slovenia, pass a load
on your own, is this?
Yes, on my own. Pass a load of Yugoslav army tanks.
I'm envisaging, you know, those war scenes where you've got a map and you've just got like a miniature Jeremy Vine.
On the bonnet.
Yes, someone's moving you with one of those weird wooden forks into like, and Vine is moving across.
No, it was so, in a beautiful way, it was so chaotic, you know.
I'm looking for the war.
Yes, it was. My colleague, Nikola Karslov, just got off the airport in Bulgaria and said, take me to the revolution, to the taxi driver. But anyway, I drove across into Serbia, but as I was driving, I thought, I've bitten off more than I can chew here. I was in the car, the sun went down, and I'm driving, and there's not a soul around, and I'm driving across what really is no man's land in a war zone, and I'm just thinking, something terrible is going to happen. The car's going to get shot up or something. And I emerged in Serbia, and then I was kind of stopped by these rough blokes, and they kind of pulled the car apart and got all my stuff, and then they put it all back in again. I drove back again. I thought, I mustn't do that again. So I remember thinking, then we also were ambushed on that trip, and we had to kind of, I've got a recording of it actually. And it was just basically being totally out of my depth, you know.
It sounds terrifying.
I think.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I should play it to you. I've got it somewhere. I've got the tape of it, but I've just like, hang on, one sec. Pause.
Yeah, pause.
Okay, I think I found it.
Getting into the cornfield now. I don't know if you could hear that, but there was shooting in the distance there, and we are actually beside a Croatian truck.
Oh my God.
That's a mortar actually there.
Oh.
The Serbs. That's incoming fire. They're firing on our position.
Oh.
We're getting back. Can we get out of this position?
Oh my God.
Can we get down the road? Who's that?
You can hear that. You can just hear it one more time. It's the bullet that nearly hit my head. That just that.
Oh,
so I know, and I hear that, and I think, oh my goodness, that was so close to my head that I saw the needle on my recording meter move, and I think, okay, every day's a bonus now.
Wow. So was that like one of those moments that just changed your view on everything, or? Or you just feel
just
really
lucky. I've got to have a think about that because I think. It's funny life, isn't it? Because the things that don't happen, in a way, didn't happen at all. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Churchill said nothing in life is quite so exhilarating as being shot at without result. And all I felt was I got back to my hotel, I thought, I'm now a foreign correspondent. You know, I went to the bathroom, I thought, that all the people with me, by the way, had done that many times before. And as I looked at myself in the mirror, I suddenly had a nosebleed, which must be stress or something. And I thought, God, I've now shed blood.
But, yeah, that's the same as me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've now shed blood.
Oh,
I had a nosebleed. But I don't know what it made me. I don't know. I just sort of think there are quite a few people who go do a lot of reporting and they never have that situation. When you have it does make you think, yeah. You realise how it can all end in an instant. And actually, funnily enough, there was a guy born the same year as me. I worked for Today. He worked for The World Tonight. He was a lovely guy called John Schofield. And he was doing similar, and it was in, I think, Bosnia, and that bullet did hit him, and he died. And it's been something that the organisation's carried for a long time, is the names of those people. Another one is Kate Payton, who I worked with, it doesn't miss, you know, and it's something that makes us all realise that at the end there's, you know, some people have paid with their lives to do that reporting. Mm. And in fact, actually, when you leave the building, you can see there's a kind of upside-down funnel on the roof, which is made of glass, that shoots a laser into the sky, which is to remember all of those correspondents.
Really,
yeah,
beautiful.
And I think, you know, all their health and safety and everything, it doesn't stop these things happening. And
no,
you look at what's happening in
luck.
Ukraine, and you look at what, particularly if you go to Africa, and it's quite chaotic in some countries, you know. You can't always budget for it.
No,
so.
No.
But you've that bit of your career is over now. You've swapped flak jackets for flapjacks.
Yeah, well, in the 90s, I was a political correspondent, and I thought to myself, I've now done exactly what you said. I've swapped flak jackets for flapjacks, but I must remember.
That's the title of your next book, mate.
Yeah, yeah, it's yours.
From flak jackets to flapjacks by Jeremy Vine and Ellie Gibson.
Ellie Gibson has written my book title.
Yeah.
No, but then at the end, when the 97 election happened and Blair got in, I thought, oh, it's the end of politics now for at least 10 years, because politics is what happens inside parties. So, and they said to me, why don't you go to Johannesburg? So I then was Africa correspondent. So it's a different thing. It's mainly to do, not so much to do with war as just general suffering. You know, you see a lot of it. And yeah, I suppose it just teaches you a lesson that news isn't just what we see on and hear on TV and radio. It was so hard to get pieces on the air, you know.
Yeah.
And you think we spend so much time talking about the price of a loaf of bread and what's going on at Westminster and Beltway, and you know, at the moment is Theresa May in trouble and all that stuff. And actually, there's a war going on in the Congo where 1 million people have died, and we've never seen a single frame of footage of it because we can't really get there. So yeah, it's like that program title, The Undiscovered World. you know. Mm. I suppose not to kind of, I know that I don't want to destroy the mood, but I sort of
no,
have
no, this, no, for that.
No, it's my gone.
Yeah, yeah, it has gone. Yeah, yeah.
This is what will win us the Sony. Come on, keep going.
Yeah. I wanted
start crying.
I can't work out. This is my question: is whether so? Is the job of the journalist to go a long way away and bring news back to where we all are, places we couldn't go to ourselves? Or is it to tell us more about us, you know, to talk to you about what, you know, what you like to do or what business you want to run or your kids or whatever? What is the job? You know, because although we think that the old model is the foreign correspondent goes a long way away, he, she comes back with a piece and you say, blimey, I could never have gone there myself. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Now it seems to have changed. And I was talking to somebody who runs the Kent Messenger series of newspapers, and he said we basically realised the more pictures of babies we have in our newspaper, the more copies we sell.
Yeah.
Because everyone just wants to see the picture of their own child in a newspaper. Mm. So I'm thinking, God, if that's the truth, if that's the case, this whole thing is wasted, you know.
Yeah.
We just want to have pictures of ourselves. Maybe that's the selfie culture.
Well, I think that's the way...
Well, this is turning into an episode of Black Mirror.
Oh, where are we going?
Seriously.
We're going,
come
we're
on,
going
okay,
deep.
Now you've got a light there.
Good.
But
good,
what do you think? What do you think? Should we... Because in a way, you're doing the great thing of you're telling people about themselves. You're telling this, you know, they're parenting and you're going to help them parent. And I'm thinking that maybe that's where we all are now, is we just want our own lives to be coloured out.
Yeah, I suppose we... Our intention, we said this right from the beginning, is neither to inform nor educate, because we can't do those things because we don't know what we're doing.
Mm.
We're just working out as we go along. And then we try and talk to different people about their experiences of parenting, which are all fundamentally the same, but also, of course, different.
We've talked about the normal. We've talked about the truth. We've talked about all the ugliness, but also the joy of parenting. And I think that's what the best response we get. And I don't know what you feel like, Jeremy, is when... People write to us and say, you've made me feel normal.
Yeah, it's very
or,
good.
Or I don't feel alone anymore.
Yeah.
But I think that the journalists have both roles, because I think you do need to be shook occasionally, because we live very comfortably, even though we've got everything to complain about in England, it appears to be. But we do need to be shaken and just realise something outside our lovely island, you know, like news from Australia on the cricket. I mean, that's important journalism, really, isn't it? The Ashes.
Don't know what they are.
We had amazing. There was a piece yesterday on Twitter by the Adelaide News which mentioned my show, and I was so excited. And it was this item we did with this vegan, and he was Australian, I think, originally, which is what he was from Adelaide, right?
Yeah.
He's
and then he
really...
moved to Vega when he was about 30.
Come on, the island of Vegas.
He is militant about, you know, not eating, animal, but anything that comes from animals, so that includes milk and cheese. So anyway, I'm about to interview him because there's a thing about farmers being threatened by vegans. That's the story. He comes in and the producer says, why don't you have a ham sandwich on your desk? And he goes... He goes... I said, I'm really sorry, but I've got my lunch here. And he goes nuts on the air. And this thing of him going, I mean, that is...
Why did you just have like a suckling pig on a spit or like a pig's head on a tray with an apple?
He was saying
this is like the swash sticker all over again.
So anyway,
he went out with you with a bit of tofu.
So I now discovered, he said you shouldn't call it a ham sandwich, you should call that a pig that's been murdered sandwich. And it just went downhill from there.
The vegan said that?
Yeah. And anyway, I just finally saw this, because there's been quite a lot of pickup from that. And then it finally arrived in Adelaide, where he is from. So I thought, oh, we've gone global, thanks to a ham sandwich.
Yes.
There we go.
Dead big sandwich, thank you.
Exactly. He was also very upset about the cheese as well.
Yeah.
Because he said that a cow...
upset about cheese. It giveth joy.
But he said, I can't remember the reason, but he was definitely not happy about it.
Oh,
yeah.
Dear. Oh,
I think I love... Firstly, I love cheese, eating cheese. That's very nice. I want to say that officially. And secondly, why did we actually get to our cell phone thing? Did we compare notes on it? Because we switched.
Yeah,
we switched from Apple to Samsung.
Yes.
Or Pixel.
Oh, sorry, Apple to Android, or I don't even know what I've got now. But
are you happy with that? I mean, I feel like there's a bit of trepidation, or you fully changed?
No, I'm in. I just need to sort my watch out because I've still got an Apple Watch.
Yeah, you see, I had the same thing as Ellie. My watch was a gift from my brother. I did not realise the Apple Watch does not work with the non-Apple phone. And that is indicative of why we switched. Ellie, is it not?
Yes, that is correct, Jeremy.
It's the sort
confirmed.
Of... Yeah, it's the sort of control. that they exert.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're a mum with two children under four, whether you've got 3 days to manage, you know, and these it's your audience, I speak, to manage the transition away from Apple is it does take a lot of.
You need like a weekend away.
The Pixel just comes with a little cable. Does this something where you just plug it in one, plug it in the other one, and it just goes do 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 do.
It did, but there, yeah.
Did you mess it up, Jamie?
Well, no, but there was a problem because it said my iPhone was encrypted because my iPhone was logged into the BBC Wi-Fi, and unbeknownst to me, it stops you copying anything. So,
The Daily Mail, so another thing you can blame the BBC for.
But anyway, to anyone listening, it is possible. Ellie and I have done it.
We've come through it. I'm more positive than you.
And I like my new phone.
Believe in yourself. You can do this.
I like my new phone, and once you've done it, you've broken free. But it is like being in the film. What's that Christopher
Matrix?
Nolan film? It is like The Matrix. You're trying to break out The Matrix.
You've had the red pill, Jeremy. This is what I'm saying.
It's really hard.
It's like breaking up with someone for someone else. It feels awkward, but just get through it. And within 48 hours later, you'll just be, you know, rabbiting away. You'll have forgotten all about the first person.
That's it.
That's roughly
That's
happens,
not how
it?
A blow works. We remember forever. Seriously, you're so brutal. We get hurt for years.
There's another book for you. Jeremy Vine, Love Letters to My Dead iPhone. There you are. I'm conscious you've got to go. I'm conscious of time. So can we very quickly do two more things? The first thing is, can we do a quick fire round? Okay.
Just one word questions and answers.
Okay. Cold pint of lager or a nice glass of red wine?
Cold pint of lager.
Good choice. Late night snack of choice, kebab or fried chicken?
Kebab.
Oh,
with chilli sauce.
Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
Stones.
Ooh.
Kylie or Madonna?
Kylie.
Good! People rarely say that.
You've got to be. Based on the last 10 years.
Yes, Kylie, excellent choice.
Go for a jog or nice lie down?
The latter.
Yeah!
I can't, my knees don't do jogging anymore. Cycle, I would take, but not a jog.
You're a cyclist.
Yeah.
Yes,
very good.
This is my special cycle life.
Just quickly, in a nutshell, can you sum up Strictly? Because I know lots of mums watched it, and, you know, that was a big thing.
It was an amazing thing to discover dancing. I won't pretend that I could dance myself, but to be in the same room as one of the greatest dancers in the world, in brackets, Karen Clifton, and then to become friends with her in a nice way, and... maybe it's like poetry. You can't write poetry by the end of it, but you can understand other people's poetry.
Yeah.
And I used to look at these pros and I could suddenly realise they've given their lives to this. And they're like gods. They are. It really is.
You were pissing about in Serbia. They were doing a two-step. Look where it's gone now.
Funny enough, Aliash was born in... I think he was born in Slovenia, probably after I visited as a correspondent, which made me feel very old. But I think it does test your nerve because you have to dance in front of 10 million people live.
Yeah.
And this nice guy, Alan, who's the floor manager, comes out and says, 5 seconds, Jeremy. And you never forget. You think, there's nowhere I can go now. Yes. I can't say wait. I can't. Everywhere else in life, you could just say, hang on a second, I'm not ready.
Yeah.
Here, you can't.
Yeah.
You're going to die on your ass if you don't get out there and do it.
You're thinking, I'd rather be in a field with someone firing at my head. This is just...
Yeah. There was a thing where... Can I tell this story on a podcast? Yes. I was in the gym with the great Karen, and it was the American Smooth. I had to lift her over my head and spin her around, and lifts are very... It's one of the problems for male celebs is you've got to do the lifting, and lifts are really frightening because it mustn't go wrong. And I had to do it about 20 times before I got it, finally got it. And she said, I said, phew, we're there. And she said, okay, I just try once more, this time without clutching my vagina.
Oh my God.
This is the best day of my life.
Amazing. Well, what can I say?
We do a lift in our show.
We do.
You?
We have a song.
Yes.
Yes.
We sing I've Had the Wine of My Life, and I play Patrick Swayze, and Ellie plays the lady, Jennifer.
Brilliant.
Yes.
And I lift her up. I don't think I've touched the inside of your vagina yet, though.
Let's say that. Let's just never speak of this again.
No, that's it.
Now, finally, yes. We do end every podcast with a scummy mummy confession.
Right.
So this is like a story of like parenting failure.
Your children announcing
something I've done that was a bad thing,
or something embarrassing that they've done that massively embarrassed you.
I loved it when I asked my oldest daughter when she was about 4, what do you want to do when you grow up, and she said a poo. I said, God, that's the same as all of us, really.
Yeah.
And what have I done that's bad as a parent? Just let me just think about this. I mean, the fairy thing was a problem, being the tooth fairy. And, you know, who's writing those notes is amazing. And then my handwriting got more and more crap at being disguised. And at some point she said, this is the youngest Anna, said, right, OK, sit down, questions. Number one, why is the handwriting getting more and more like Dad's? And then the whole truth came out about everything. About everything was blown. She did the proper Columbo on us, you know. And she was really upset for a while. So, yeah, I hope no, we haven't got kids listening to this because I don't want to.
I'll just bleep some of the words.
So things came out that should not have been heard by a child. Yes. Put it like that.
Yes.
So that was a bad one for us, yeah. And that was all to do with my handwriting slipping.
Oh.
Because I started, when I started doing the Tooth Fairy notes, I spent ages, you know, like you imagine if you're doing a blackmail note in a murder case. Oh, you never imagine that? You go with the hand you don't usually use. So with me, that'd be my right. And you hold the pen in the front, and your handwriting doesn't. And by the end, I was just like writing it normally, and she just completely busted me.
So there we go. Well, now your book, what was it called?
It's called What I Learned. Basically, all about my listeners. Yeah.
There we go. And your next book, of course, from Flap Jackets to Flapjacks, will be out in the autumn.
Yes, yeah, indeed.
Good
indeed.
Stuff.
His publisher will be thrilled. More books not to sell.
Yes. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast. As usual, please rate, review and subscribe. Follow us at Scummy Mummies and all the things.
And we're doing live shows across the UK, Belfast, Cambridge, Winchester, all over. I can't be bothered saying anymore.
Anything else you want to plug, Jeremy?
Just want to big up the Scummy Mummies and say how nice it is to see you guys.
Oh, thank you.
And what a great thing it is to have a parenting podcast. I wish I'd had something like this to listen to when I was, you know, in the earlier years.
Maybe the BBC should put it on their radio.
Maybe they should.
Maybe they should return their emails.
Thank you so much. You've been absolutely fantastic.
You.
We're so
thank
grateful.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you, Ellie.
Thank you. All right. All until next time.
Bye-bye.
I think we need to write a new song for the show, Helen.
We do.
I think it's going to be called I've Had the Vine of My Life.
We've never had a guest this good.
Don't say that, because the other 118 people might get pissed off.
No, sorry, Jane Garvey, you're still our favourite.
Also, Dara Brynn, very strong. Also,
David Baddiel, also. Sandy Toksvig, great.
Clary Hooper, I mean, all fabulous.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.